About 5 years ago, there was great optimism among many in Louisville about the future of the Metro Police Department. The department had begun embracing the pillars of 21st century policing, a set of best practices that emerged from a task force appointed by then-President Barack Obama, who publicly lauded LMPD's efforts. But just a few years later, protesters filled the streets of downtown Louisville, angry about the police shooting death of Breonna Taylor and police violence against black people. So what happened in between? That's the question pursued in the new season of the podcast Dig, from the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting and the news network Newsy. I'm Rick Howlett. Today we'll talk with some of the journalists and others involved with Dig, and we want to hear from you too this hour on In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. Welcome to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Howlett in Louisville. Thanks for joining us today. Well, the second season of the podcast Dig from the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting and the national news network Newsy is out. It's available now. This season is called The Model City. It focuses on policing in Louisville and on a period leading up to the police shooting death of Breonna Taylor last year that, of course, sparked protests here in Louisville and elsewhere. It's a time span of about 5 years in which Louisville Metro Police went from being held up as a national model of policing to the target of these racial justice protests. And joining us today to talk about Dig Season 2, Policing in Louisville, and many other things are Kerry Cochran, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist with the national news network Newsy. Kerry, good to have you with us. Kerry, are you there? We'll see if we can get Kerry connected here in just a few minutes. Also joining us is Eleanor Klibanoff, reporter with the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting and host of the new season of Dig. Eleanor, good to have you with us.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you with us. So Will Pitts is with us, whose eloquent and candid voice is heard throughout the podcast, also known as Mr. Willennium. He is a father and husband, co-founder and CEO of Willennium Enterprise Foundation Incorporated. He's a mentor and coach, founder and CEO of Willennium Sports, and a businessman. He co-owns Moomoo's Child Enrichment Center, and of course, he's a lifelong resident of Louisville, spent many years growing up in the west end of Louisville, and you can hear, again, his voice throughout Dig Season 2. Will, good to have you with us.
Man, I'm glad to be here.
We want to hear from you, too, if you have questions or comments for our panel of guests. We want to, if you want to talk about the podcast or about policing here in Louisville, where it's been, where it's going, call us 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255. You can send us a tweet, WFPL News is our handle there, and you can also reach out to us through Facebook. We did extend an invitation to Louisville Metro Police to have Chief Erica Shields or another representative join us, but we did not hear back from them, so we will proceed. And I want to start with you, Kerry. For those who don't know, let's learn a little bit about Newsy. I know it's not just an online publication. I know you operate on several platforms. What led you to decide to participate in this project in Louisville? The Breonna Taylor shooting and the protest, of course, were international stories, but this podcast was a year-long commitment by Newsy. And Kerry, good, are you with us now?
I am.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. What led Newsy to participate in this project?
So we had, you know, like many people across the country, been watching sort of the racial reckoning that was happening in the summer of 2020. And we really thought that this was a conversation that we should look into. I came from the Cincinnati Enquirer. I was there for 13 years, just right up the road from Louisville. And I covered Cincinnati police. I was actually started my career with a police shooting of Timothy Thomas in 2001. I also had covered the Sam DeBose police killing in 2015. And so some things seemed new, some things didn't seem new. I also was back in the Cincinnati area because of COVID. And we kind of thought, you know, Louisville, there are things that make unique, that make Louisville unique, but there are a lot of things that the city of Louisville and the Louisville Police Department sort of is perhaps emblematic of what was going on across the country. So we thought, let's dig into one police department and really try to tell some of the nuances that really can only happen when you are focusing in.
Well, this is really a comprehensive look. And Eleanor, before I talk to you, I want to play a piece from the first episode. In this episode, you set a scene here. You take us to 26th and Broadway in West Louisville. This is the morning after David McAtee was shot to death at his barbecue restaurant. This is during, of course, the early days of the protest. This would have been late May of last year. Police and the National Guard had been trying to disperse people they say were violating curfew. Late that night, they fired pepper balls at them. McAtee, we learned later, fired some gunshots from his restaurant. There was a barrage of return fire. He was killed by a National Guard member's bullet, we later found out. So the next day, they're waiting for the coroner to come and retrieve his body, which had been out there for hours. Police are on one side of the street guarding his body, and people in mourning and angry about McAtee's death were on the other side of the street. Let's listen to this cut.
The tension radiating between these two sides was unbelievable. It felt like one wrong move would unleash decades of pent-up anger and emotion. The police and the community were separated only by Broadway. The four lanes of asphalt felt like a force field. Neither side could cross it, and if they did, all hell would break loose. It was a stark physical representation of exactly the problem that brought Louisville to this crisis point. A police department and a community that were at war with each other. Bishop Dennis Lyons, a pastor who knows the McAtee family, showed up and immediately understood the problem.
There was not a person on the police force that had a relationship with the black community that the black community respected enough that could bolt that situation down.
And Eleanor Klibanoff, again, that was from the first episode of Dig. It seemed at that moment, I know you were out there, that the police and the black community in Louisville had really never been more far apart, right?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I felt like, wow, you know, what a moment that we've been brought to here. But I think for many people on the West End, it was the death of David McAtee was a shock, but everything that sort of brought us to that point was nothing new and not a huge surprise that these tensions had eventually boiled over in such a public-facing way with the protests. But I think it's a moment, as I say in the podcast, that, you know, will stick with me forever to just see this city sort of brought to the breaking point. And then as we talk about in the podcast, you know, it was really the sense, I talked to so many people that day who said, you know, the police were there, but we're not there to protect them, right? And they felt like they sort of, people out on the street stepped up and ensured their own safety that day and sort of talked the tension down amongst themselves. And it was really, I think, a very powerful moment for me and for a lot of people.
Well, it's a great metaphor for what has been happening in this city over the decades. So let's go back to about 2016. There's great optimism about the future of police and community relations, especially the black community. The department was recognized as a national model by the Obama administration for policing. But, of course, there was a hill to climb to get to that point, because previous to that, and Carrie touched on it briefly, as I'm sure you all know, there was a rash of police shootings of black men that sparked protest on a smaller scale. So it's been a roller coaster ride. So how do we get from that point to a national model? I know Eleanor, that the incident that happened in Ferguson, Missouri, was a contributing factor, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think the people we've talked to have said that back in 2014, 2015, right around the time that, you know, Michael Brown had been killed by police in Ferguson, there had been other similar killings. There had been, nationwide protests. It was a moment, I think, that felt very similar to 2020. But, you know, at that moment, I think Louisville sort of proactively thought, like, we can be part of this conversation. We can be part of building a better police department. We, you know, Mayor Greg Fischer's talked a lot back then about, you know, cities need to be aware of like what they can do now to not become Ferguson. And they got this report that the Obama administration had put out and got to work really sort of doing what the report said you needed to do to build a better relationship between the police and communities of color.
And as we mentioned, actually, the chief was invited to the White House, and Louisville was held up as a national model in 2016, among a dozen or so other cities, as a national model at that point of policing, right?
That's right. Yes. You know, the Obama administration, when they put out this task force report, I mean, it's a sort of wonky thing, a task force report, but they really committed very publicly that they were going to make sure this didn't just sit on a shelf gathering dust. And so they went out to find cities that were proactively interested in implementing this plan called 21st Century Policing. And, you know, Louisville was reaching out to them. Louisville was saying, come look at the work that we're doing. Come see what we're doing. And the Department of Justice visited Louisville, and then in 2016, and then a month later, they went to the White House as part of this, you know, what was formerly called the Advancing 21st Century Policing Initiative. But Louisville came back and told the community, you know, we're a model. We're the model that's going to teach people how to reform their police department.
Well, we're going to talk much more about this policing concept that came out of the Obama administration. But Will Pitts, I want to bring you in. First of all, and again, we hear your voice throughout the six episodes of Dig. But tell us, for those of us who don't know you, about your life in Louisville. You're a Louisville native, right?
Yes, sir. And I've been in Louisville for 40 years.
And you spent much of your early days in the West End of Louisville, right?
Yes, sir.
And you have always maintained strong ties and a presence to that part of town, right?
Yes, sir. I always, first of all, I want to definitely give a shout out to all the people that was a part of the Dig podcast. Definitely a beautiful piece. You know, it helped kind of tell our story. You know, our side of the story tend to be forgotten about. And, you know, so, you know, growing up in the West End has always been a struggle for young black men, even to date. You know, black people as a whole, or black or brown people, you know, we always get met with some of the harshest and most brutal force that you could possibly imagine. You know, so we've always had a strained relationship, you know, with the police department.
Well, we're going to talk about that in more detail as the program goes on with Will. Just to hit the reset button here, you're listening to In Conversation on WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. And we're talking about the second season of Dig. This is called The Model City and has to do with policing here in Louisville and the events leading up to the shooting death of Breonna Taylor last year and the protests that erupted here in Louisville and elsewhere. You just heard the voice of Will Pitts, who's going to be talking more about his life here in Louisville and the West End of Louisville. Also with us is Eleanor Klebanoff, reporter with the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting and host of the new season of Dig. And Carrie Cochran is with us. She is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist with the National News Network, Newsy. The Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting and Newsy produced this second season of Dig. We're going to talk much more about that. We want to hear from you, too. Call us, 502-814-8255, with your questions or comments. We'll be back with much more after a break. You're listening to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio.
This stuff sounds wonky, but it's actually pretty simple. Everyone across the city, no matter what neighborhood they live in, would get the same treatment from the police. Policing that's about your protection and safety. Officer friendly, not officer bang down your door in the middle of the night, or officer rip you out of your car in front of your kids over a traffic offense.
If they had left everything else out of that 21st century, it's okay. We're just going to do number one. We're going to build trust with the community and at the same time maintain public safety, that would have been a healing for police, especially the black community.
Welcome back to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Howlett in Louisville, and that was an excerpt from the new season of the podcast Dig from the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting and the National News Network Newsy. The second season of Dig is called The Model City. And here with us to talk about that are Eleanor Klibanoff, reporter with the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting. She is also host of the podcast. Carrie Cochran is with us. She worked on the project for Newsy. And Will Pitts is with us. He's a Louisville native, grew up in West Louisville, has been a witness and given voice to many of the developments over the past 17 months in the city. Since the police shooting death of Breonna Taylor. Eleanor, let's talk about some of the elements of community policing that everyone was so excited about 5 years ago, 21st century policing, that made it such a source of hope for many. There's this concept, as you mentioned, of cops knowing and interacting with the people on their beat, you know, not just in traffic stops or arrest. And that, I'm sure that does happen in some neighborhoods, but it was really an effort to enhance that. But you also talk about an early warning system that was introduced here but never really adopted. What is that? What's the early warning system?
Yes, that's actually something we looked into even before this project. Newsy and KYCIR started looking into that back when the settlement with Breonna Taylor's family was announced. One of the things that they said in that settlement was they were going to create an early warning system for police officers. And we knew from looking into 21st century policing that Louisville had been claiming for years to have an early warning system. And this is a tool that experts say can be one of the most effective parts of a police department's accountability systems if it's used correctly. And the idea is that, you know, police officers are people too. And if there's, you know, if, let's say a police officer has a string of issues or a string of misconduct concerns, a string of use of force incidents, or car accidents, or things that, you know, their supervisor might want to know about. If there's a number of those issues in a row, it triggers this system. It notifies their supervisor, and the supervisor, you know, doesn't automatically get you in trouble. It just prompts your supervisor to look a little bit more closely at what's going on there. One of the examples we give is like, maybe you're going through a divorce and you're having a really rough time, but you're a police officer who's out on the streets doing, you know, one of the most high pressure, high stress jobs out there. And so your supervisor might want to know that you're feeling off your game. And then, you know, that's one end of the spectrum. And on the other end of the spectrum, you know, if there's officers who are engaging in routine misconduct, you know, their supervisor should know that so that they can be retrained, disciplined, or taken off the streets if need be. So Louisville claimed for years to have this. This was a 21st century policing initiative that they claimed to have completed, and they just never did. Until now, they have said in the Breonna Taylor settlement that they will do that. We asked them, you know, just a few, maybe 2 weeks ago, and they still have not activated it yet again.
Well, it seemed as officials were embracing the concepts of 21st century policing, at the same time, they were also declaring war, excuse me, on violent crime, which was escalating in across the city, especially in some neighborhoods. And they and that war on violent crime, Eleanor, that was really a more aggressive approach that kind of ran counter to the community policing concept, right?
Yes, that's right. I mean, you know, these two things can be, they don't need to be at odds with each other, right? You can fight violent crime by building relationships and... one of the things that we found is, you know, those two things sort of have to be working together. You might be able to drive down crime in the short term with just aggressive policing strategies. But in the long term, you know, what really helps is, you know, not just the police building relationships, but thinking about violent crime holistically, thinking about the causes of violent crime, thinking about, you know, the impact of poverty on violent crime, on, you know, drug use, on all these things, and fixing the root causes, not just sort of aggressively going after the neighborhoods that seem to harbor the most crime.
And Carrie Cochran with Newsy, were you able to draw parallels with what was going on here in Louisville with what was happening in other cities in terms of embracing community policing, but also having to deal or taking a stronger approach to a surge in violent crime?
Yeah, so we also are, you know, unfortunately seeing this happen today, right? Like, we know across the country, homicides are sort of surging. And so with this conversation about how do we police better, community policing, it's, you know, unfortunately, some of the things that we saw back in 2016 have gotten worse across the country and in Louisville. So we really did, you know, it's hard to make too many broad assumptions across the country because we really, really did focus on Louisville. But there certainly we hear about cities, you know, political pressure with even mayors and police chiefs to get these crimes down. You know, when even, you know, the newspaper and TV outlets are reporting on homicides. And so there's the really immense pressure to immediately do something about it, or at least show that you're doing something about it. But then at the same time, these are real lives that are being lost. And I think that Will can really speak to that. He has really shared a lot of some of his experiences and sort of what it means to sort of, you know, have this happening in your community.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that, Will Pitts. Let's talk about what's the experience been like for you, how police have responded to the surge in violent crime as just a member of the community, but as a Black man in the city of Louisville.
I think, you know, honestly, they approach it with a very immature approach. And what I mean by that is, despite whatever you're going through, even in your own lives, we all go through something. But you don't have to tell Will every day that I wake up and I leave my house that I don't have to be a consummate professional. So, you know, the way we operate and the way that things are being done, I think they only address certain issues. They don't really get to the bottom of many issues that Black people really care about.
How would you assess the effort for by police to pursue this concept of community policing, to have officers out in neighborhoods and get to know the people in the neighborhoods? Is that something you witnessed firsthand?
Absolutely not.
Really?
The relationship between my community and the police has been strained for decades. Even before me, my parents and their parents, you know, they police us with a very strict way of doing things. If you have people who are not even from your neighborhood, come to your neighborhood and want to kind of put you in order or put you in check and don't really understand the climate, the things that go on. They don't even understand our culture. So if you don't even understand that, how can you even begin to police us? So, and what I mean by that is, you know, say somebody is from the hood that's on the police force. When our voice is raised and we're agitated, they don't perceive it as a threat. They just know we might get a little unruly versus someone who's not from that area may perceive it as an actual threat. And we know, you know, what happens once the police perceive you as a threat. Bad things can happen. You could lose your life. You can be embarrassed. You know, slammed on the ground, violated. So, you know, we just need better relations, better understanding of the people that you're dealing with.
Well, I want to talk about your hopes for the future with the new police chief and all the changes that have been promised by the city. But I want to go back to the timeline, Eleanor Klibanoff, and talk about again, this reaction to the surge in violent crime. There was these crime fighting units that Will alluded to were formed. There was a Viper unit and the 9th Mobile unit, and that seemed to contribute to the problem, to the increase in mistrust, didn't it?
Right. So Louisville had had for a couple years, it had this unit called the Viper Unit. And in 2015, they, you know, as violent crime started climbing, they rebranded that as Ninth Mobile. And over the course of the next couple years, Ninth Mobile, you know, they were supposed to be going after like the most dangerous people in the most dangerous parts of the city as part of this strategy called People, Places, and Narcotics. And they became known for these really aggressive traffic stops that they were engaging in, specifically in the West End, specifically in Black neighborhoods. They generated, you know, a lot of internal investigations. We found through Rosie Chima, our data reporter, found that Ninth Mobile officers were at least 2.9 times more likely to be investigated by the department than the rest of the force. And, you know, that's one metric of an aggressive unit. They also, you know, we found at least four cases where evidence was thrown out in court by a judge because the that their search was deemed to be unconstitutional. So this was a unit that was sort of given a mandate to go out and like stop crime. And there were, as you know, Michael Sullivan, the former deputy chief at LMPD, said, you know, we did see reductions in crime, but what was the you know, was there a loss of community trust? And that was at the exact same time that Louisville was trying to be building this community trust, or so they said, you know, as part of this 21st century policing initiative.
Well, during this time as well, there was this pervasiveness of video cameras. Everybody's got a camera in their hand now. And one thing that happened here in Louisville that really put a face on all of this and was this traffic stop of a young man that you highlight in Dig, Tayon Lee traffic stop in Louisville. Tell us about that and tell us who was involved in it.
Yeah, so that was a traffic stop by the Ninth Mobile Unit. Tayon Lee is, and you know, at the time was, you know, an 18-year-old kid just going to the gas station to get a slushie, and he, when he left, he gets pulled over almost immediately by Detective Kevin Crawford and Detective Gabe Hellard with the Ninth Mobile Unit. And what happened over the next, you know, it's about roughly a half hour traffic stop, I think was very indicative to a lot of people in the West End of what had been happening, you know, across many traffic stops. You know, he was taken out of his car, he was handcuffed, they got a dog to search his car. The dog's handler said he had a positive indication of drugs. So they put him in handcuffs, they searched the whole car, they didn't find any drugs. And there was just several instances throughout this where the officers on their body camera said some things that were very, you know, revealing, I think, about how this department was thinking about fighting violent crime. You know, at one point, Detective Gabe Hellard says, you know, we're going to stop 30 more people after you. So really implying that this was the department strategy at the time, was do these traffic stops. And again, like, they were supposed to be going after the most dangerous people and the most dangerous places. And Tayon Lee, who's 18, no criminal record, no drugs in the car, was not, did not seem to fit that bill of what they were supposed to be doing. And Chief Conrad, at one point, you know, sort of backwardsly admitted to this, where he said at a Metro Council hearing, you know, that in the 2nd Division, which covers parts of the West End, these traffic stops, I believe he said, one or two out of 10 of these traffic stops were generating guns or drugs, which means, again, that, you know, the vast majority were people like Tayon Lee, who, you know, they did not have guns or drugs, which is what this unit was supposed to be going after.
You're listening to In Conversation on WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Howlett in Louisville. We're talking today about the second season of Dig. It's called The Model City, and it focuses on policing here in Louisville. And as of course, the period leading up and including the shooting death of Breonna Taylor by Louisville police last year, but 5 years or so prior, when Louisville was held up as a national model for policing. And we're talking with some of the folks involved with Dig: Eleanor Klibanoff, whose voice you just heard, reporter with the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting, host of the new season of Dig. Also with us on the phone is Carrie Cochran, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist with Newsy, mm-hmm. the national news network that's a partner in Dig, the podcast. And Will Pitts, who lives here in Louisville and whose voice is heard throughout the podcast, grew up in the West End, is a lifelong resident here, is an entrepreneur and businessman and mentor. He is with us as well. We want to hear from you, too, if you have a question or comment about policing here in Louisville, the second season of Dig, if you've heard it and have a response to it. 502-814-TALK is our number. 502-814-8255. You can reach out to us with a tweet if you'd like, and we'll read your tweet on the air. WFPL News is our handle, and you can reach us through Facebook as well. Eleanor, let's talk a little bit about the police union, because there was a contract in 2013, right, and that expired in 2018, and I guess we're still trying to, the cops and the city, the FOP, are still trying to come up with a contract, right?
That's correct. Yeah. So the contract, the most recent 5-year contract, expired in 2018. They could not agree on new terms, so they sort of kept extending it. Last summer, during the height of the protests, they signed a short-term contract that included a pretty significant raise for officers. And now they are in negotiations for the new 5-year contract, which they had come to the table with one. It got voted down by the officers who make up the FOP, or the Fraternal Order of Police. And that is still proceeding. So, you know, one of the most surprising things that we found in this project was, you know, how poorly paid LMPD officers are compared to similar size cities and our suburban areas. One of the things we found was that, you know, this big raise that they got last summer that was sort of, you know, subject of a lot of scrutiny, actually only restored starting officer salaries to what a starting officer would have been paid in 2004 in Louisville if you take inflation into account. So they've really been sort of like losing ground on the salary front when it comes to inflation since this police department was created out of the city-county merger in 2003-2004. So obviously salaries are a huge topic on this question of the police union contract. On the other side, a lot of people would like to see some reforms sort of baked into that contract, and it seems like that is what is up for debate right now between the city and the union.
We need to take a break here. We'll talk about this much more. We're talking with Eleanor Klibanoff with the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting. Carrie Cochran with Newsy is also with us, and Louisville resident Will Pitts is with us as well, as we talk about the second season of Dig, focusing on policing here in Louisville. We'll be back with much more. We're going to take your calls as well. 502-814-TALK is our number. Back with much more after a break. You're listening to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio.
LMPD has long made it a practice to call a press conference when one of their officers kills someone. Between 2016 and this moment, LMPD officers have killed 16 people. At a lot of these press conferences, Conrad uses the same phrase that he uses at this one.
Police work is inherently dangerous. And as police officers, we hope we never have to fire our weapons. But when we're forced to do so, we understand and we accept the high level of public scrutiny that results from
we
that.
Accept the high level of public scrutiny.
We accept the high level of public scrutiny that comes
the high level of public scrutiny that will result.
We accept the high level of public scrutiny that results from that.
But historically, many of these police shootings didn't attract that much public scrutiny. The city offered their story, then a few months or years later, the case was quietly closed with no discipline for the officers. That's what seemed most likely to happen after this police shooting in March 2020, particularly as the city, the whole country, the world, turned to focus on the COVID-19 pandemic.
That is an excerpt from the second season of the podcast Dig from the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting and Newsy, and we are back on In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL. I'm Rick Howlett in Louisville, and our guest today, as we talk about Dig and policing in Louisville, are Eleanor Klibanoff, whose voice you just heard on that piece, reporter with the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting and host of Dig. Carrie Cochran is with us, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist with the National News Network Newsy, and Will Pitts is with us. His voice is also heard throughout the podcast, and he has grown up in the West End of Louisville and is a lifelong Louisville resident. father, husband, and entrepreneur. And we want to hear from you. We want to hear your comments, thoughts about if you've heard the podcast, your response to it, or policing in general here in Louisville, the past, the future of policing here. We'd like to hear your thoughts. 502-814-TALK is our number, 502-814-8255. A couple of folks have been holding, so let's go to Michael in Louisville. Michael, welcome to In Conversation.
Thank you.
What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to ask the representative of the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting, have they seriously investigated the concept and the movements going on presently for community control of the police? That is, a community selected or elected entity with the power to hire and fire officers, oversee the budget and policies and practices, which is something that's being seriously considered and fought for in various other municipalities like Portland, Chicago, and D.C., among others. And how that could possibly work in Louisville.
Thank you for your call, Michael. Eleanor, this is one of the concepts that have been talked about since the shooting of Breonna Taylor and a part of this settlement, right, with her family?
So there's definitely been an ongoing conversation in Louisville since, you know, last summer about how to get more community oversight of the police. One of the things that was promised as part of the settlement with the family was that was not part of the settlement. One of the things that the city has promised even before the settlement was to create a more robust civilian oversight body. They just made moves to hire an inspector general. They are, created the civilian review board. That is sort of, I think, from what I understand, sort of the furthest reaches that effort has made in Louisville, which is slightly different than, you know, what you're discussing, which would be sort of like a complete overhaul of this idea of like who controls the police. It's an interesting concept, just not one that I've heard really batted around in Louisville. I think the most common response we get to these sort of ideas about more community oversight from people who are opposed to it is, you know, there is civilian oversight in the sense that, you elect the mayor, you elect, you know, your council people, they hold the police department accountable. Obviously, that's not an opinion that, everyone in the city holds. So people want more robust civilian oversight. So I think that's going to be an ongoing conversation. One thing I will say is that, like, I know that there's been a push to get civilian eyes on the police union contract negotiations and to get civilian observers in that room. And that has, so far during this round of police union contract negotiations has not gotten traction. So it seems like, there's maybe some baby step efforts that are underway, but that sort of broader conversation I've not heard gaining much traction.
Well, in that excerpt where we came out of the break, we heard from former police chief Steve Conrad, who was, of course, dismissed after the day after the shooting death of David McAtee here in Louisville. But he was talking about what happens, and you were talking about what happens after someone is shot and killed by Louisville police. And there's a long process, right, that goes on, or it can be a long process. If someone is dismissed, they can appeal their firing or whatever discipline is handed out, right?
Yes. The one of the main things we found is sort of how onerous the disciplinary process in Louisville can be for police officers. There are cases that stay open for months and or years. And there's sort of this process of, in at least the case of a police shooting, there's a criminal investigation and that takes a while. And then there's a policy investigation and that takes a while. And then you can appeal and then they have to hold the appeal within a certain number of days. And then, it is a long and arduous process that, basically everyone on every side of this that we've talked to says, is not working the way it's supposed to. It is not, it's a case where justice delayed can be justice denied for everyone, right? A police officer who stays under investigation for too long only to be exonerated, or a police officer who's told, hey, I think Dave Mutchler, the police union spokesperson, told us this sort of idea of, like, if you tell me 2 years later you shouldn't have done a traffic stop that way, I could have done that traffic stop that way a dozen times since then. The disciplinary system needs to be sort of at least faster, according to a lot of people that we talk to.
Well, as we mentioned at the top of the show, we did extend an invitation for police to Louisville Metro Police to offer Chief Erica Shields or another representative to talk with us today. But you also tried to get an interview with new chief Erica Shields. I think you ended up having to chase her down after a meeting or a community forum, right?
That's right. Yes, we have tried to get Chief Shields to talk to us on this podcast. I will say Greg Fisher, the mayor, did talk with us.
Yes.
And, you know, we were particularly interested not in having her, you know, come, you know, talking about what happened before she got here. But actually, you know, she was the police chief in Atlanta, which was another one of these cities that was really held up by the Department of Justice as, you know, an example of a city that was going to implement 21st century policing. So we just really wanted to talk to her about, you know, her experiences in Atlanta more so than her, you know, asking her questions about what happened here in Louisville. But unfortunately, we were not able to secure that interview.
I think you did ask her a couple of questions about community policing, which she seemed to endorse. Let me turn to you, Will Pitts. You've seen the new chief hired. I know it raised some eyebrows given what her experience back in Atlanta, but what are your thoughts about the new chief?
I just feel that she doesn't really have the type of relationship that I would want in the community for my chief. One being she's never stepped foot in the city of Louisville before becoming the chief. She really doesn't know many things she really doesn't understand the way this city is. Carrie kind of spoke on it. Louisville's just, it's a different place. It's not what many people are used to. So maybe her coming in, she thought she was going to get an easy job somewhere, small town USA. But Louisville is an awesome city with a lot of awesome people that do a lot of awesome things. And I think she had her hands full coming in, you know, dealing with the Breonna Taylor stuff. And if you ask me, you know, the police department are saying we're so many officers short. But you know what that tells me? Then guess what, chief or acting chief? Strap your boots up, put your suit on, and you get out here and help police. You're part of the force just as much as anyone. You're the leader. People will follow your lead. So if you really want to set the example, then get out here and do it. Because I'm really tired of us having this same old conversation about my people, my children losing their lives. You have to really be in this situation. You know, over these 40 years I've been born and living in Louisville, Kentucky, I've seen a lot of people go to gun violence. And we're at the point where we don't want another chief to come in and just have a title and have a job. We want a chief that can lead. We want somebody who's strong and really can combat what's going on the streets. The police department have been having the same common practices and tactics for years. And it's proven not to work. So what we need is somebody to come in here and understand what the city of Louisville is all about, what we love, what we don't like, and start there. The relationship that's being built, like, I don't have a relationship with the chief. I'm sure very few people have a relationship with the chief. You only see her if she's standing on a podium or doing a podcast. You know, you can spend hours doing stuff like that, but you need to spend more time really getting to the issues at hand. And we have a lot of them in the city of Louisville that's really not being addressed in the way that I feel that they need to be addressed. Because I'm fed up. I'm at the point where I don't want to lose another child. I don't want one of my friends to lose another son, another daughter. You should not have to live your life worrying about if you're going to be the next one. You know, the city of Louisville could be the model for many other cities. But we tend to still have old school practices, old school tactics. We got a small town Mayberry practices in a city that's fairly large. Mm-hmm. And we need to figure out a way to get all these community leaders, all these people who saying they're doing so much in the communities, and all these officers who really want to do a good job, but are dealing with, well, if I support equality, then I may get exiled from the Blue Brotherhood, the ones that I need to help protect my life. So, you know, you kind of put officers in a tight situation where they have to either be pro-police, or if you be neutral, then that means you're not pro-police. Because in my opinion, they don't really want the truth. If a police officer does something, right, they automatically get backed up and get supported, right or wrong. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you have to sit back and say, no, let's see what's actually correct. Because we know for years, and I know firsthand, these police officers have been fabricating bogus search warrants, you know, there's no real check for their sources. So if an officer walk in there right now and say, yeah, I got some intel that insight that this guy's selling drugs, and this is why, this is who told me, there's no reference check on that. Nobody goes behind them and say, oh, okay, well, let's really figure out if this is true. They kind of go off the officer's word. So that's why you see, even in the Breonna Taylor case, Breonna Taylor was killed in March. That search warrant wasn't even updated. The search warrant was a January search warrant. So there's been 2 months that passed where something could have changed, but nobody checked. Cross-checked the references. They just continued on with an old search warrant.
Let me stop you there, Will, and reintroduce everybody. That's Will Pitts, who's a Louisville resident and grew up in the West End. He's here with us to talk about the second season of DIG, the podcast about policing in Louisville. Also with us, Eleanor Klibanoff with the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting and host of the new season of DIG, the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting. And Newsy brought you this podcast, DIG. And also with us is Carrie Cochran, who's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist with Newsy. And Carrie, before we run out of time, I want to get your impressions about over this the source, this journey, this project that you were involved in with Newsy. What have you taken? What are some of the big takeaways that you have about Louisville and about policing in Louisville? Gary, are you there? Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, one of the bigger takeaways, I think, is how we kind of think of people being on certain sides, you know, like the community side, the police side. And we did see a lot of heightening, a lot of escalating of those sides. But at the same time, we heard a lot of the same concerns from people on what we traditionally would think are opposite sides. So we heard a lot about the desire from police to have help with, you know, mental health issues, dealing with that, the desire to, you know, have better police officers on the force. People saying, you know, I want to be proud of the department I work for. And so when we allow sort of bad officers to stay on the force and stuff, or when we're recruiting people and there's a sort of national trend of smaller sort of diminishing pool of applicants, a fear of who you know, are we lowering our standards? And are we, I think Dexter Pitts, one of the officers in the podcast says, you know, I don't want anyone who is going to be on this force to corrode the badge. And then on the same side, we hear people from the community saying we want better police. We want officers to be paid better so that we can have, you know, good police. And so I think in a lot of ways, there's a lot of things that Louisville has sort of suffered through, a lot of trauma, I would say, over the course of the last couple of years. And really, you know, people have been dealing with some of these issues for decades and decades. But part of it is having these conversations. And so I think that there is, you know, some optimism. Also, people like Will, who are doing things for the community to try in his own way to, you know, prevent gun violence and really mentor people. So there is hope, I think, even though a lot of things are sort of worse in some aspects, I still think there's hope.
We'll have to end on that note. Again, Dig is available wherever you get your podcast. I want to thank Carrie Cochran. You just heard from Newsy. Will Pitts, thank you so much. And it's a bittersweet day here at WFPL because Eleanor Klibanoff has taken a journalistic opportunity in Texas, and we're very excited for her, but we're going to miss her desperately. Eleanor, thanks so much for the work you did on Dig and everything you've done for us here at Louisville Public Media. We appreciate it, and thanks to all of you for joining us.
Thank you.
No problem. You're welcome.
Thanks to our In Conversation production team, too. Michelle Tyreen Johnson, Laura Ellis, Brad Yost, and Russell Wells. Our local news anchor is Bill Burton. Kojin Toshiro composed our opening and closing theme. And I'm Rick Howlett. Thanks for listening.